Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
My sister Nancy won a free trip for two to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. It was some kind of call-in competition on the radio where she had to answer sports trivia or something. It included VIP passes to a couple parties and a three-night stay at one of the oldest hotels in the French Quarter. She was planning to go with her boyfriend Ben, but she had broken up with him just before the trip. So, she called me and asked if I wanted to go. I had a lot of work to do, but I couldn't pass up this kind of opportunity. I'd always wanted to see New Orleans. So I rescheduled things at my job and joined Nancy on the trip. When we got there, festivities were in full swing. We checked into the hotel and then started exploring the area. Guys were constantly offering us drinks and asking if we wanted to earn some beads. Nancy said yes to everything, but I was a little less confident. I guess my sister wanted to go crazy during the trip, especially after her breakup.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
I'd never seen her act so wild before. In the afternoon, there was a huge parade running through the streets. It passed right in front of our hotel. There were dancers and floats and people everywhere. It was total chaos, but it was also really fun. Then one particularly strange float passed by. Unlike all the others, it didn't have many decorations. It also wasn't colorful. The whole thing was a black and gray platform with six jazz musicians on it. They all had different instruments, and they were all wearing black. I don't know why that particular float creeped me out, but it seemed really out of place. As it passed us, the man playing the saxophone set his instrument down and started gesturing toward Nancy. He wanted her to join him on the top of the float. Nancy tried to shake her head no, but the man seemed pretty insistent. Nancy looked at me and said, "Why not?" Then she walked closer and the man pulled her up onto the float. The other musicians continued playing and Nancy started to dance. At the time, it seemed like a fun little moment, even though the float seemed a little weird. But then, the float got farther down the street and Nancy tried to jump off. All the musicians stopped her from leaving. They were a bit far away, so I couldn't hear what she said, but it looked like she was telling them that she wanted to get off. The saxophone player again set down his instrument and held her in place. By then, the float turned onto another street and I lost track of them. I was all alone, even though I was surrounded by a crowd of people. I didn't know what to do. I knew that my sister could take care of herself, but I still had a very weird feeling. I pushed my way through the crowd and tried to get onto the street where the float had turned. But it took a while, and by the time I crossed through the other floats, they were gone. I tried to tell myself that everything was going to be okay. Mardi Gras was a big, crazy celebration, and you just have to go with the flow. So I went to a nearby cafe, which was a bit quieter than the street, and I tried to call my sister. She didn't answer. I texted her, but she still didn't answer. I didn't want to be out there by myself, so I decided to go back to the hotel room and wait for Nancy to get back. She never did. The party continued on the street for the rest of the day and into the night, and Nancy still hadn't returned. I texted her a bunch of times, but I still didn't get any response. By the middle of the night, I was really worried. I called my mom to ask her what to do, but she told me I was overreacting. Then I called two of Nancy's friends and got the same answer. I opened up my Instagram to try to find any other friends that I thought could give me some advice. That's when I noticed that Ben, her ex-boyfriend, had posted photos from the same parade. He was in New Orleans too. I knew that their big breakup had been pretty messy, so maybe he had something to do with her kidnapping. After all, why would he come all this way and not tell us about it? So I messaged him, asking where he was. I didn't want to talk to him directly because I was afraid of what I'd say. I also didn't want to accuse him outright. If he did have something to do with the kidnapping, it was best to get as much information out of him without making him angry. He texted me back right away, admitting that he'd come all this way to surprise my sister. "She definitely looked surprised," I responded. He said he didn't understand. He hadn't seen her yet. I couldn't tell if he was lying. Why would he be honest about being here and then not tell me the truth about taking Nancy? And why would he even post photos from the parade at all? None of this made sense. I was about to text him again when he called me. He asked if he could speak to Nancy, and I told him that she wasn't with me. "What?" he said. He sounded so surprised that I knew for sure he had nothing to do with her kidnapping. I figured I'd tell him the truth, so I explained what happened with that strange float at the parade. He asked me if the jazz musicians on the float were all wearing black, and I said yes. Then his voice got really panicked, and he said that he'd read about a group of local kidnappers who all wear black and steal women away in the middle of big celebrations. He said that he didn't believe the stories, but it definitely sounded like Nancy was the group's latest victim. He told me that he knew exactly where the group was gathered. I demanded that he give me the location so I could call the police, and he told me no. He said that these men were way too dangerous to get the police involved. He said we'd have to pay them off ourselves. He gave me an address and told me to meet him there in 30 minutes. He said he'd bring the money to pay them off, but he didn't say how much. After he hung up the phone, I honestly didn't know what to do. Deep down, I believed he was telling me the truth and really wanted to help Nancy, but I wasn't 100% sure. I also didn't know if I could trust him to deal with such a serious situation. Ben was always kind of a goofball. That was one of the reasons why they broke up. Still, I didn't have a choice. I waited about 15 minutes and then headed out of the hotel to go to the address he'd given me. I ended up at a really old, ornate cemetery within walking distance from the hotel. It was completely empty, but I was close enough to the main streets to still hear people partying in the distance. "Hello?" I called out. "Ben? Nancy?" No one answered. I walked among the giant tombstones and elevated graves. I'd never been more scared in my life. I really regretted not telling anyone else where I was going. And then, in the distance, I heard jazz music. The sounds were slowly getting louder, and I realized it was the same group of black-wearing musicians that had pulled Nancy onto their float. They were playing their instruments and walking between the graves. They walked right toward me. I thought about running, but then I'd never get any answers about what happened to my sister. So I just stood there, trying to look as confident as possible, and waited for them to approach. Finally, they stopped right in front of me, still playing their music, and the saxophone player tossed two small objects at my feet. They all turned to me and walked back into the distance, their music fading away. I looked down at the ground and almost threw up. Right at my feet was the necklace that Nancy had been wearing. Right next to it was a single slip of paper with the message, "He didn't bring enough money." I never saw my sister or her boyfriend ever again. Since middle school, my two best friends and I have dreamed of celebrating Mardi Gras in New Orleans. My friend's aunt used to tell us stories of her wild Mardi Gras adventures. One year, she fell in love. Another night, she and her friends ended their night running from the cops after they snuck into a supposed haunted theater. She made us want to experience the chaos for ourselves. My two friends are older than me, so we decided my 21st birthday was the perfect occasion for our real Mardi Gras. My friend's aunt warned us that we may be too young, but we reminded her that she had partied when she was younger than we were. She made us promise we wouldn't flash anyone for beads. A promise none of us kept. That Tuesday came, and we all planned to skip class Monday through Wednesday. We wanted to do this right. We drove down Monday and spent the day on Tuesday doing the tourist thing. We all wanted to ensure we looked good. So, we gave ourselves plenty of time to get ready. I wore my black tube dress. Guys flocked to me whenever I wore that dress to frat parties, and I wanted to get as many quick drinks as possible. I didn't go crazy with makeup because I didn't want it to be a smeared mess by the end of the night. I don't want to sound full of it, but I look good. My friends look just as hot. One wore a mini pink halter dress and the other a fitted red pleather tube dress. We looked at ourselves in the mirror and Julie chirped,
"We're going to get so many beads and free drinks."
We all laughed and headed out to the first bar. On our way to the bar, the streets were already pandemonium. Amidst the chaos, an old woman grabbed me and said,
"Beware of the man in the mask."
I shook her off and continued on my way.
"What was that about?"
"I don't know. Just some lady probably already drunk off her ass."
At the first bar, we ordered a round of shots and each ordered a cocktail. I assessed the room. Not many guys stood out, but that didn't mean I couldn't snag a free drink. Sure enough, I caught the eye of one guy and gave him a small smile. About 10 minutes later, our waiter brought each of us another drink. I looked back at the guy and he raised his glass to me. Behind him stood a stiff person in a white Mardi Gras mask and a black cloak. Kind of weird, but anything goes on Fat Tuesday. It looked like the person was staring directly at me, but there was no way to tell in their mask. They gave me a sick feeling. My stomach churned as I continued looking at them.
"Hey, you good?"
Steph cut in, snapping me out of my trance.
"Oh yeah, just all the masks kind of freak me out."
At the next bar, we ordered the cheapest drink we could and waited for the free drinks to come. Another group of ladies ordered us a couple rounds of shots when we told them it was my birthday. We were laughing and having a good time with them when I saw the masked person again. They stood off in a corner, still stiff as a board, looking in my direction. I sipped my drink and smiled at the person to see if they would react. They didn't. They continued their stoic stance. I nudged my friend Kim and tried to point the person out to her. As I directed her attention to that corner, the masked stranger was gone. I told myself it must be someone else. After all, more than one person was wearing a mask like that. The group of women that bought us shots invited us to the next bar they were going to. Of course, we couldn't say no. This is exactly what we hoped would happen. The third bar felt like the epitome of Mardi Gras. At one point, my friends told the waiter it was my birthday, and the entire corner of the bar started singing happy birthday to me. We took to the dance floor, where I became entwined with a tall, dark stranger. He had soft brown eyes and a thick head of hair. I felt like we were pulled together, drawn to one another, even though all that happened was we were pushed into each other by the other dancers. Without saying a word, we fell into the same rhythm. "What's your name?"
"Sandra." "What's your name?"
"Jake." I had no idea how long we were there when my friends came over to break it up. I was annoyed, but I knew they were looking out for me. We promised not to split up because it's not safe to be a woman. Jake was unfazed. He offered to get us all drinks and left for the bar.
"He's cute." "Yeah, we were really enjoying each other until you two came up."
The two of them laughed.
"We lost sight of you and got scared you were taken."
Jake returned and gave me a wink as he handed me my drink. I introduced him to my friends, and they hit it off immediately. Jake was quite the charmer. My friends adored him and soon left us so we could be alone again. "Cool friends," he said. I smiled and ran my fingers through his hair. My head started to feel heavy and it became hard to breathe. "Are you feeling okay?" he asked.
"Probably just need some water."
"I'll go grab you some." I don't remember him coming back with water. Not long after he left to grab it, the room blurred until it went black. I had a fuzzy memory of someone carrying me out of the club and getting stopped by the bouncer. She got a little ahead of herself. I'm taking her back to the hotel. Whoever was carrying me yelled over the music. I remember the bouncer looking at me and then looking at him. I tried to say something, but my mouth felt numb. The bouncer let us go. Then it went black again. I woke up in the back of a van. There were two other girls with me, both passed out. I tried kicking them to wake them up, but neither budged. I looked around. I saw the white mask and a heap of black fabric in the corner. I looked to the front of the van and into the rearview mirror and saw Jake's brown eyes. Another man sat in the passenger seat. They were focused on the road. It seemed like we were going pretty fast by the feel of it. I needed to act. Who knew what their destination was, but I knew it wouldn't be good for me. I needed to stop this van. I grabbed the cloak and rolled it up so it would be like a rope. Quietly, I crept to the front of the van. I climbed over the seats until I was behind the driver's seat. I wrapped the cloak around Jake's neck and held him against the headrest. He started grabbing at it to try and loosen it to get air, but I held it tight. His partner went to grab me, but I fended him off by kicking him. Jake released the steering wheel to pry the cloak away from his neck, and his partner took the wheel. We swerved into the next lane and collided head-on with a small sedan. A couple other cars couldn't stop in time, so it ended up being a 5-car pileup. I released Jake, unlocked the door, and got out of there. I went to check on the person in the sedan. They were okay, but needed to go to the hospital. I used their phone to call 911. When I looked back at the van, the two men were gone. I checked the bank, and the two girls were still there. I'm relieved I saved myself and them. None of us had to meet whatever dreadful fate awaited for us. I got back in contact with my friends who were worried sick. After Jake dragged me out of the club, they spent the rest of the night trying to track me down. They talked to the bartender, to the bouncer, to people on the street until they ended up going straight to the police. I was stupid to accept that drink, and I'm lucky I can tell the tale. I'd always wanted to go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. I'd seen videos of the crazy celebrations they have down there, and it seemed like such a cool experience. I never really had enough money to go though, so it was always just a dream. Then, last year, I got a call from Dan, my crazy friend from college. I hadn't heard from him in years. He asked if I wanted to go with him to a Mardi Gras festival. He said we could drive together. I lived in South California, so it seemed like a pretty long drive, but Dan said he wasn't planning to go to New Orleans. He wanted to take me to Lake Havasu, which is this desert town just a couple hours away. I guess they have Mardi Gras celebrations every year, and apparently they're just as wild and crazy as the ones in Louisiana. I said yes, of course. That was definitely in my budget. Besides, I hadn't seen Dan in forever, and I really wanted to reconnect.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. So he picked me up and we drove in his old Nissan through the desert. It didn't take me long until we made it to Lake Havasu. He got us a pretty cheap hotel near the lake, close to restaurants and clubs, and a dock where we could rent jet skis. You say I make you nervous, a tragedy. I'm a beautiful. It was the day before the big celebration, but a huge party was already going on at our hotel pool. The pool overlooked the lake, and there were at least 50 people swimming and dancing and doing the kind of stuff you'd see on Girls Gone Wild. It was intense. As the night wore on, I lost track of Dan in the crowd. I guess I drank too much because I ended up passed out near the pool. When I woke up the next day, I was back in my hotel room lying on the carpet. The sheets were tangled around me and my skin was sticky all over. I assumed it was vomit from all the alcohol, but when I looked down at my hands, I saw that both my hands were stained red. I was covered in blood. even though I was still woozy and hungover, I jumped up and started freaking out. I looked all around the hotel room to find Dan, but he wasn't there. Then I heard the toilet flush, and Dan casually walked out of the bathroom. He smiled at me and said, "You owe me big time." I demanded to know what had happened last night. He casually sat on the couch and then motioned for me to join him. When I did, he told me all about the night before. He said that I'd gotten completely wasted and ran off with some girl down the beach. I stole some guy's boat to impress her, but then I couldn't get it started. She was pretty drunk too. While she was trying to figure out the engine, she got really close to the boat propellers. When I started the engine, the blades of the propellers caught onto her hair and pulled her under. In seconds, the girl was chopped to bits. I didn't say anything for a long moment. I thought he was joking. He was telling me this disgusting story in the most laid-back, casual way possible. He had to be messing with me. But then he pulled out his phone and showed me pictures he'd taken of body parts floating in the water. I instantly threw up. Dan laughed. "Dude," he said, "you really can't handle your liquor. This had nothing to do with alcohol. Someone died. I killed someone and I don't remember." He patted me on the back and assured me that he took care of it. He found me in the boat, gathered up the girl's remains, and then took me to one of the islands on the other side of the lake to dispose of the body. Then he washed off all the blood on the boat, took me back to the hotel, and went to sleep. My head was pounding, especially my left ear. I felt like throwing up again. I screamed at him, "How could this happen? You should have called the police." I screamed for a full minute before he punched me in the arm and said, "It's okay, dude. It's Mardi Gras." I pulled my phone out of my pocket and started to call the police, but Dan snatched it away before I could finish dialing. He told me that if I called the police, we'd both get arrested. He said that no one was going to find the body for days, and by then, we'd be back in California. I tried to tell him that we needed to tell someone. Even if we got away with it, I couldn't live with the guilt. The poor woman probably had a family wondering where she was. "You'll either feel guilty in prison or feel guilty as a free man," he told me. "I think the second option's better." Then he laughed, like this was just some wacky party story. I didn't know what to do. I walked into the bathroom and took a shower. When I came back out, Dan had already shoved my blood-stained blankets into my suitcase so we could dispose of them later. He looked up at me and said, "I think you should go down to the dock to see if you can remember anything from last night. I'll wait here." I agreed. I needed to sort through my thoughts. I passed by the pool where I'd first gotten drunk. Even though it was still early in the morning, there were a bunch of people swimming and drinking. I kept my head down and walked toward the lake. Thankfully, there were less people along the water. I tried to remember anything from the night before, but I couldn't. As I walked along the water, I saw a group of policemen up ahead. There were three of them, all inspecting a boat that wasn't properly tied to the dock. That must have been where the accident happened. I walked closer. I needed to see for myself. One of the policemen shouted for me to back up. I was too close to the scene of the crime. I backed up a little bit, but I was still close enough to have a look. There didn't seem to be any blood on the boat, but I saw the policeman shoving something into a clear evidence baggie. It was a small silver earring. I recognized it as one of Dan's earrings. He was wearing them from the night before. Horrified, I realized that the boat was probably filled with evidence that we'd left behind. "Back away," the cop said again. I turned around and hurried away from the scene. I was suddenly really aware that my left ear was still throbbing. I touched up to it and felt something strange. I was wearing an earring, which was impossible because my ears weren't even pierced. I pulled the thing out and saw it was small and silver. It matched the one in the evidence bag. That's when I finally pieced everything together. Dan was the murderer, and he was trying to pin it on me. He went as far as piercing my ear while I was passed out and tricking me into wearing his earring as a way to incriminate me. Suddenly, I heard Dan's voice behind me. "That's the murderer! He's returned to the scene of the crime!" I spun around and saw Dan pointing right at me. This was all part of his plan. The policeman on the boat jumped up and ran toward me. They tackled me to the ground. As I was shoved face down against the sidewalk, they slipped the handcuffs on me. I could hear one of the policemen tell the other one about my earring. I twisted my head to the side and saw Dan standing behind the policeman, smiling at me. He knew that I'd finally figured out his plan, and he knew that he was going to get away with it. One of the cops walked over to him and asked him for a statement. As the others held me down, I could hear Dan lie to them, saying that he had witnessed me return to shore covered in blood. I felt so angry, so betrayed. Not only had he tried to convince me that I was a murderer, but he had convinced everyone else too. And then, the policeman told him something that I'll always remember. "Thank you, sir. It's always better to have an eyewitness instead of just some security camera footage." The cop pointed toward a security camera fastened to the tree right over his head. It was pointing directly toward us, recording everything. And judging by the angle, it had recorded everything that Dan had done the night before. Dan's in prison now. I've moved on with my life. And I will never, ever celebrate Mardi Gras again.
I've been trying to lose weight for years, but it's always been a struggle. Everyone in my family is big, and I never really saw that as much of a problem until I moved to West Hollywood. It's been 3 years since I came here, and ever since then, I've always been the fun, fat friend in the group. Everyone else is ripped and gorgeous. They don't try to make a big deal about my weight, but it's obvious that they treat me differently. Last winter, my roommate Parker and his boyfriend Chad invited me with them to go to their gym. They assured me that lots of people my size worked out there, so I wouldn't be embarrassed. I agreed, but as soon as I got there, I knew they lied to me. Everyone in the place looked like a male model. It was ridiculous. I tried using the treadmill, but I could feel the other guys staring at me as I huffed and puffed my way through the excruciating miles. I was bright red and dripping with sweat, surrounded by all the beautiful people. I told myself that I'd never come back here. But after I showered off and changed back into my street clothes, someone grabbed my shoulder. At first, I thought it was Parker, but when I turned around, I found myself looking into the most beautiful eyes I'd ever seen. "Hey," said the stranger. "I'm Steven. You're new here, right?" We started talking, and it was obvious this guy was flirting with me. Honestly, it felt good. One thing led to another, and he invited me out for coffee. I ordered a black coffee, nothing else, but Steven insisted that I try the cheesecake. He said that it was amazing. I tried to protest. I was struggling to lose weight after all, but he wouldn't take no for an answer. That's when I knew that he was some kind of chubby chaser. I'm a direct person, so I just asked him if that was the case, and he said that he liked my body type. It had been so long since someone had complimented me on my looks, so I was flattered, but I told him that I wanted to get healthier for my own sake. He smiled and said that he didn't have a problem with that. He still ordered the cheesecake, but he said it was just for him. Not surprisingly, he had 2 bites of the stupid thing before he slid it across the table in hopes that I would have the rest. I really didn't want to, but it looked so good. We talked for about an hour, and things were going so well. I was starting to really like him. By the time he stood up and said he had to get back to work, I realized that I'd eaten the rest of the cheesecake without even realizing it. After that, Steven and I started seeing each other more and more. He was perfect in every way, except he kept making plans whenever I tried to go to the gym, and he kept buying me snacks and desserts that I inevitably ate. I knew exactly what he was doing, but I couldn't stop myself. I was really starting to fall for the guy. Of course, after a few weeks like this, I noticed that my weight was going up. Parker politely encouraged me to try more cardio at the gym. He even gave me some smoothies that I could drink instead of regular meals. It was clear that he was worried about me. He knew that I had started seeing someone, but he had no idea that my new boyfriend was the reason for my increase in weight. And all this time, Stephen treated me like a prince. He was pretty well off, so he always paid for everything. I started spending more time at his place than my own, and ended up seeing less and less of Parker and my other friends. He lived in a gorgeous condo, and I felt really comfortable there. But he said that the top floor was off limits. His office was up there, and he had a lot of confidential files that he needed to keep safe. I didn't think anything of it until a few weeks ago. I was alone in the condo because Stephen had decided to drive to the grocery store and pick up some snacks. He let me watch TV alone, but just a few minutes after, I heard a soft thump coming from upstairs. I knew that no one else was in the house, so I decided to go upstairs and check it out. I reached the door to his office and knocked. "Anyone in there?" I asked. No answer. I tried again. "Hello, is anyone in here?" I heard a soft groan. Someone was definitely inside. I tried to open the door, but it was locked. I was starting to get seriously creeped out, and I knew I couldn't just give up. I slammed my body against the door. It took me 3 tries, but I was able to break it open. One of the benefits of my added weight, I guess. What I saw inside that room shocked me to my core. There was a single bed inside, surrounded by huge canisters. And on that bed was the biggest man I'd ever seen. He filled up the entire bed, parts of him hanging off over the edge. He tried to say something to me, but his mouth was covered by some plastic tube connected to one of the canisters, a feeding tube. I ran over and pulled the nozzle out of his mouth. "Who are you?" I asked. "What's going on?" "Called the police," he wheezed. A thick pink liquid coated his chin from the tube. I looked at the nozzle, which had fallen to the ground. It was still pumping out more of the liquid, spilling it onto the carpet. Had Stephen done this to him? Was he keeping him captive? Just pumping him full of calories? And worst of all, was he planning to do the same thing to me? "Let's get out of here," I said. I grabbed his massive arm and tried to pull him into a sitting position, but he wouldn't budge. He was too big to move. He was trapped there. I pulled out my phone and frantically tried to unlock it, but before I could, Stephen appeared from behind me and pulled the phone from my hands. "I see you've met my ex," he said. "Stephen!" I shouted. "Give me the phone!" He shook his head, grinning. "Sorry, my love. I told you not to come up here." And with that, he shoved me. I fell backwards, colliding with the man's massive body. Stephen chucked my phone out the door, and I could hear it fall down the stairs. Then he reached into his pocket and pulled out a bottle of what I assume was chloroform. I couldn't let him get me. I reached down and grabbed the nozzle which laid on the ground. It was still pumping out the liquid. I held it up and blasted Stephen in the face. He wasn't expecting it and stumbled backwards. The ground was already coated with the slippery stuff, and he slid even more. Before I knew it, he fell out the door.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
He tried to grab onto the door frame, but he couldn't. In seconds, he fell to the bottom of the stairs. I followed him down. He was motionless, his neck twisted unnaturally to the side. I couldn't tell if he was still breathing. I crouched over him and dug his phone out of his pocket, then called 911. Stephen ended up in a coma that he still hasn't woken up from. He's in the hospital now, strapped to feeding tubes of his own. Marcos, his kidnapped ex, is at a treatment center trying to get his life back. As for me, I'm back at my old apartment with my old friends. I go to the gym 3 times a week, and I'm already down 16 pounds.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.